Blog Talk Radio.
Karen?
Yes, Jim, I'm on.
Hi, Jim.
I'm here.
Barbara. How are you?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Ready to go.
Is it cold down there?
Well, it's not warm. Let's put it that way. It was in the high 50s today.
Oh, that's kind of chilly.
Yep.
Barbara, can you and Jim hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I don't hear Karen on here yet, so until she comes on and we can hear her voice to kind of lead the charge here this evening. This is JB, and I'll go ahead and speak for a few minutes. Jim, Colonel, if you would, while she's getting the show opened up the rest of the way and getting her own mic turned on, would you please go ahead and bless us this evening?
We'd be glad to. Let us pray. Our Heavenly Father, we come to you this evening very humble. We know that we've betrayed you. We've betrayed your trust as a nation and as a people. We apologize for what has happened to our nation. We apologize for those who are in control, who have led us down a path of immorality and sin. We ask that you bring us back, that you help us bring back those folks that have strayed from it. We ask that you be with us this evening as we try to enumerate the things that we have accomplished so far and what we would like to accomplish. Help us to think clearly. Help us to be able to affect others' thinking so that they can also join our effort and try to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. We've got a tremendous task in front of us right now because we're losing our country fast. Our leadership has failed us, and those that are trying for leadership have failed to acknowledge the path we've gone down and how they're going to change it. So, Lord, we ask that you be with us this evening. Be with those who are listening to us that they can also understand what we're saying and why we're saying it. We ask also, Lord, that you guard and guide and direct those who are fighting for our nation, whether it be in the military, our law enforcement, firemen, or even our missionaries who are spreading word all over the world. We need you, Lord. We know it. We have fallen your suggestions on 2 Chronicles 7:14. We're coming to you for help, and we ask that you do help us this evening. These things we ask in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Hi, this is Karen. Can you hear me yet?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning here. And thank you for filling in here. I don't know if you heard any of my introduction. I did do an entire introduction, but I don't think you heard anything. So I'm just going to start by welcoming everyone to the Impeach Now radio show on Blog Talk Radio. And this show is sponsored by the North American Law Center and the Constitutional Accountability Coalition, which is now 29 states strong. And my name is Karen Bracken with the Constitutional Accountability Coalition, and I'll be your host and moderator for tonight's show. And I do apologize for the mix-up in the beginning of the show, but that's grassroots for you. We do have J.B. Williams from the North American Law Center with us tonight, and also, as you know, Colonel James Harding. And J.B. is going to be sharing some information about his recent speaking tour across the state of Michigan. And we will also discuss a House Resolution number 198 by Representative Yoho of Florida and his recent comments in a radio interview, and also a press release from Representative Fleming of Louisiana. Just to give you some website and email information, our website is cactn.weebly.com, and our email address is cactennessee@gmail.com. And the website for the North American Law Center is northamericanlawcenter.org, and their email address is info@northamericanlawcenter.org. And let me just put this one on hold. Okay. Representative Yoho from Florida did an interview last week, and I'm going to play you just a short portion of that interview. And just to let you know, we have been in touch with Representative Yoho's office to set up a face-to-face meeting with him, and we extended an invitation to him to be on the show tonight. But so far we haven't heard back from them, and it is our hope that we will hear something from him in the next week. So I'm going to play this short video, and I hope everybody will be able to hear it. Because it's an MP4 type video, I wasn't able to load it on the show. So here goes.
Are you surprised over the years with all the scandals and all the things we've seen in the current regime in Washington that there hasn't been more of a serious push for an impeachment of the President of the United States? And is it too late for that to happen?
Thank you for bringing it up. No, I do not think it's too late. And the reason I say that is we introduced H.R. 198, which defined high crimes and misdemeanors and impeachable offenses. We introduced that. We're going to reintroduce it because it didn't gain much traction because it has the word impeachment in there. And the willingness of people in Washington to stand up and say, you know what, we're going to chalk the field of the football field. And this is the purpose of our bill, was to show the owners of the football field so that the executive, the Supreme Court justices, and everybody in Washington in government knows where the boundaries are. If you step outside of that, you're going to be penalized. In addition to that, we're introducing, and I'm hoping this comes out next week, it'll be a joint resolution of a disapproval for Barack Obama. And it's going to focus solely on national security. And we're going to introduce this, and I'm excited about this, because this president needs to be held accountable. I checked with some of the chairmen from some of the committees that would deal with this, and they also said, I can't believe nobody stepped up to impeach this president. And it's not too late. And anytime any president oversteps the boundaries, they need to be reined in. And the only people that can do that are the members of the House. We've got to initiate that. The American people in our district are clamoring for that. And Kevin,
okay. There's just a few more seconds of this portion of the interview. But I personally have read House Resolution 198, and I do have some questions and concerns about it. That's why I was hoping that Representative Yoho would be able to join us tonight. But I do recommend, and if you weren't able to hear the recording, you can go on our website on the events page, and everything we talk about tonight is posted there for you to look at. In the meantime, what I'm going to ask everyone to do is to call Representative Yoho's office and let him know the American people, not just the people in his district, want this president impeached, and a resolution will not do that. His number, his office number, is area code 202-225-5744. I called his office, and I was advised that Representative Yoho is very aware of the North American Law Center Articles of Impeachment. I also asked if she had any more information about this other joint resolution that Representative Yoho spoke of in his interview, but she did not have any information about it for me, so I will be watching closely for the announcement of this resolution. If anyone listening today is from Representative Yoho's district, I strongly encourage you to set up an appointment to speak with him. They will be home for Christmas vacation. And we here at the Constitutional Accountability Coalition and North American Law Center will be very willing to offer any support or help that you might need in getting through a face-to-face meeting with Representative Yoho. So please take a few minutes and go to the website under the Events tab, read the resolution, House Resolution 198. It's very short and it's very easy to understand. And also the video that we just listened to is posted there too. Also in the news, Representative Fleming from Louisiana recently posted a press release on his website that I feel should be of interest to us. He has received 6 copies that I know of the articles of impeachment at his D.C. office, and he is one of the very few that allows emails from people outside his home state of Louisiana. He is also running to replace Senator Vitter. So this is a very important election for him. And this is just a little excerpt of what he posted on his website. Washington, D.C., Congressman John Fleming, M.D., released the following statement after the House Armed Services Committee released its findings on the release of 5 high-level Taliban terrorists from Guantanamo Bay in exchange for Sergeant Bergdahl in 2014, and here's the statement. President Obama's decision to swap 5 battle-hardened Taliban terrorists for Sergeant Bergdahl not only made the world a more dangerous place, but as we have learned from the committee's report, it was also illegal. By intentionally misleading Congress and the American people on the status of a proposed swap, the administration blatantly broke laws requiring congressional notification. Even though these particular detainees were deemed too dangerous to transfer by the administration's own officials, the president quietly released these individuals to achieve his own political goals of unilaterally closing Guantanamo Bay. And this press release, you can also find a link to it on the events page on the website, and also a link to send Representative John Fleming an email. And I just encourage you to contact Representative Yoho, let him know that the American people want the articles of impeachment served to the Judiciary Committee. I would send an email to Representative Fleming saying the same thing. If you live in Representative Yoho's district, I encourage you to set up an appointment with him and meet face-to-face. And again, everything we've talked about tonight is available for you on the website under the events page. It'll be there for the next week, and then I'll be moving that information to the call to action page. So I just thought you might be interested in hearing these things from Representative Yoho and Representative Fleming. It just never ceases to amaze me. Every representative that we talk to stands up and says this president should be impeached, and it is the responsibility of the House. But no one is doing anything. I'm just blown away. So we're going to hear now from JB. He's going to tell us about his recent tour of the state of Michigan. And, JB, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
How are you?
My first comment is to tail off on what you were just talking about, Karen, and that is to state for the record on this pod, you know, what will end up being in archives where people can send it around and listen, and others can listen in at their leisure, and those who are not there here live tonight. But it is very consistent messaging that we're hearing from House Republicans so far. This is the most impeachable individual in U.S. history. They agree on that. B, he's done a lot of impeachable crimes, which we all agree with. They agree with that, too. C, yes, he is impeachable because of that. And D, he should be impeached. Now, we agree with the House Republicans up to this point, and then they all continue on to the next points where we disagree. They either then proceed to give you one of a laundry list of reasons they have worked out in their talking points memo and circulated throughout the Republican chambers of the reasons why they can't or shouldn't impeach. It'll get in the way of an election cycle, which we're never not in an election cycle now. The blacks are right in the streets. Well, the blacks riots in the streets sometimes anyway, regardless. And I'm not so sure that's true anymore, because I think a lot of the black community has figured out that they're the ones being harmed the most by this administration. And certainly Trump's popularity, it seems to be proving that a lot of blue collar folks that would normally be voting Democrat have also figured that out on their side at this point. And so that one doesn't hold water. The fact that they shouldn't impeach in the House because the Democrats and Republicans won't convict. Well, until they do impeach in the House, there's nothing for the Senate to do. And then my favorite one is we can't impeach because it's the people's fault. They're not clamoring for it, and therefore there's no way for us to demonstrate that they support the idea of impeachment, and without their public support for impeachment, we can't impeach. Now, every Republican House member knows that this is supposed to be a constitutional republic and not a democracy where everything is put on a national referendum before anything can happen, as if we were a pure democracy. And they also are aware of the fact that over half of Americans voted for them in 2010 to give them control of the House, and in 2014 to give them control of the Senate as well. And so the notion that they are unaware or unable to prove that the American people support Republicans in Congress so that Republicans can do the jobs that they are, A, elected to do by those people, which is hold Obama accountable, B, have taken an oath to do under their oath of office to protect and defend the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the American people in all 50 states. And so the point is, according to the American people we hear from daily, it is the do-nothing rhino's fault in Congress for why this disaster of an administration continues forward. But according to the rhinos in Congress, it's the fault of the people for why they have to sit there on their hands, twiddling their thumbs, and pretending to be doing something. Because the American people simply have not showed up in force with pitchforks and torches in D.C. yet in order to convince Republicans that there is support for holding Obama accountable. So having laid all that groundwork, this is a very consistent theme we're hearing out of D.C. I think that's a perfect groundwork to take a listen to what Rep. Yoho is actually proposing here, which, by the way, he has proposed once before several months back, and it didn't go anywhere then. He's going to propose it again this week, he says, and it is not articles of impeachment that he is proposing. It's a resolution, which means a non-binding document passed by the House. And what he's really essentially asking, again, is to define the words high crimes and misdemeanors as if our laws don't already define those terms. Certainly our laws do define those terms, as do they define words like treason, treachery, tyranny. These words have been defined, you know, hundreds of years ago. They don't need a new definition like marriage from the new governing elite, who thinks we need a new definition of 2,000-year-old words. What we need is enforcement, and that's what, you know, that's why people voted for Republicans in both chambers of Congress in 2010 and 2014, was to put them in a position where they could have the power to do what was necessary to shut down this disaster, this constitutional catastrophe that we call the Obama administration. And yet they sit on their hands and blame the American people for not yelling and screaming loud enough, not bringing pitchforks and torches to the meetings in order to convince them beyond any shadow of a doubt that the 70% of people in America who believe this country's headed in the wrong direction want something done about it. And that all they can do, Rep. Yoho is right, it is up to the House Republicans to do it. That is where this all has to take place. It takes one member of the House to initiate impeachment in the House Judiciary. It takes 20 out of 23 House Republicans on the Judiciary Committee to pass it to the full House. It takes only 218 House Republicans out of 247 who are there to pass and impeach this president, at which point now they will have the opportunity to present all the evidence, not just before the Senate in a trial, but before the American people in the court of public opinion. If you, the only way you can get a jury, whether it is the court of public opinion or a jury in the Senate or a jury in a criminal trial, on your side is to present the evidence. And until you're going to initiate impeachment in the House, there's no place to present the evidence. So what we have here is not Democrats preventing this from happening. We have House Republicans preventing it from happening. But they can get away with that because the American people are more concerned with whether it's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or Chris Christie, who's going to save them in 2017 than saving themselves in 2015 or 16. They're more concerned with, can they come up with a ticket to defeat Hillary Clinton in November 2016 than they are dragging her into the middle of an impeachment for her role at the State Department and what is undoubtedly the most corrupt and criminal administration in U.S. history, and especially as it pertains to situations like Benghazi. And so, you know, what we have here is we have House Republicans saying, well, we're not going to impeach because the Senate won't do its job. Therefore, we're off the hook doing ours. And they can get away with that because we have the people saying, well, we're not going to force and talk to our members of the House because they won't do it. And even if they did, the Senate won't convict. So they got two reasons to do nothing. And that leaves us in the position where the American people have been for at least the last 35 or 40 or 50 years, which as far as I'm concerned is 40 or 50 years too long, and that is every one of them is waiting for someone else to save the country. Everybody knows that the country's in trouble. Everybody knows that the Constitution says what you do about the situation we have is you impeach. You pointed this out earlier in a conference call with me, Karen. It doesn't say we can. It doesn't say we might. It doesn't say maybe we should. It says we shall impeach and remove from office on high crimes and misdemeanors. Certainly treason, tyranny, and treachery qualify as high crimes and misdemeanors. And if they don't, then no crimes against America do. And so, you know, the bottom line here is, and I will talk about Michigan because there's good things happening up there, and I want people to feel optimistic, but I want them to feel optimistic by the fact that there are people out there who agree with us, who are willing to do the right things, who are willing to take a personal stake in this fight. And we just simply need to grow those numbers and get people moving in the right direction at the right time. But the real problem here is the average American, Karen, is waiting for someone else to solve the problem, and there isn't anyone else.
So, and it isn't going to be the next president. That is for sure. Just to reiterate on some points that you brought up, we have posted on our website, on the homepage, several recent polls that have been taken. And most of these polls had over 200,000 participants in them. And that's a pretty huge sampling when it comes to surveys and polls. And over 80% on all the polls, over 80% of the people said yes, they wanted President Obama impeached. I think that's pretty significant, especially when we have Representative Louie Gohmert saying that unless 50% of the American people want this president impeached, nothing is going to happen. Well, again, the Constitution doesn't say that you wait until 50% of the American people want impeachment to do your job. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. And the job of our elected constitutional republic officials is to support, defend, and uphold the Constitution. So no matter what the people think, really, I mean, that's something that our elected officials forget, that their job is to support the Constitution and vote according to the Constitution, not according to what the people want. That is a constitutional republic. But anyhow, the other thing that concerned me was that he seems to be, and Representative Fleming, leaning towards national security as the issue and nothing else. They're ignoring the fraud, They're ignoring the misconduct and malfeasance of this president. They're also ignoring the aiding and abetting our enemies, and they seem to be targeting on just national security. That concerns me. And the other, you were talking about excuses that we hear. The one excuse that you didn't bring up was they're so scared to death of the backlash that they got when they impeached President Clinton. And I believe what they mean by that is that the House turned Democrat, and they're blaming that on the impeachment of President Clinton. What that says to me is you're more concerned with maintaining your Republican seat than you are in saving our country. When they use that as an excuse, that's what it says to me. So I said just some comments I wanted to make about, you know, some of the things you were talking about. And, you know, tell us what happened in Michigan. I think it's a really good story of what's going on there.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say about this other than the Lord works in mysterious ways. A few weeks back, I was invited to come speak to three different events. I think pretty much all of them, there have been six now total, as of this past trip last week. I think for the most part, these have either been sponsored by and held by, or at least largely attended by, Republican Party precinct chairmen, either at the county level or the district level, or in some cases state level committee members. And this is a significant point because these are people who are at the lower levels of the Republican Party that, again, not just the constituents who voted for these people who are House Republicans now, but the very people that these House Republicans go to at campaign time to raise funds and hold barbecues and the likes in order to get them elected the first time and come back again and again to get them reelected. And so these are people that in what is supposed to be a ground-up form of self-governance, even within the political parties themselves, we're starting to see on a regular basis now in Michigan after six different events up there in six different counties or six different areas of the state, covering a good portion of the state as far as House districts go at this point. We're beginning to see a lot of traction up there as far as people inside the Republican precinct saying, okay, enough is enough, you're right, and we've had enough of electing these people and being their lackeys to go out at fundraising time, and that's all. And we want them to represent the will of the constituents who voted for them, as well as these committee chair people, you know, at the lowest level of the county and district levels in their states. And this is a significant movement. You know, a while back we put together and released out there a county-level resolution, and we're going to release an updated version of that tonight or tomorrow morning, so stay tuned and get back to these sites that Karen mentioned earlier, and I'm sure she'll remind you all at the end. Get back to there and pull down a copy of this new resolution. It will be designed to be used at the county level, at a district level, or even at a state committee level inside the Republican Party, and it's designed. And we have passed it in a number of counties out there now, but now we need to ratchet up and get to the district level out there, where in this case in Michigan, last Tuesday night, a week ago tomorrow, I spoke to a group over in the 7th district in Michigan. And I did not know at the time when I was speaking to this group Tuesday night, I did not realize, nobody mentioned it, that the following night, Wednesday night, there was a district meeting of the Republican Party coming up. But as it turned out, when I finished speaking Tuesday night, the next afternoon, we got several calls wanting me to come speak to other groups in Michigan as a result of that night. But then as the day wore on, we started getting phone calls asking if I would come speak to the whole 7th district and help them with a resolution at the district level to pass, calling upon their House Rep, Tim Walberg, to move on articles of impeachment drafted by NALC, calling from the whole district to do that through a district-level resolution, Or if he refuses to do that, and this is part of the update that's being done to the resolution now, if he refuses and ignores the demand by the Republican Party in his district, as well as his constituents, to move on it, then they are letting him know in the resolution that there will be no barbecues and no fundraising for Tim Walberg's reelection effort. In fact, they will instead be funding anyone willing to run against Tim Walberg. Now, this is exactly where the people can and should apply the pressure. You know, Tim Walberg needs, and so does every other House rep, they need not only the votes in their district in order to win an election or reelection, they also have to have the fundraising at the district and county levels, all the way down to the local levels in the GOP precincts. They need the help of those precinct members in order to get elected or get reelected. And if we are not going to fund any of these politicians, and we're letting them know by passing this resolution and then handing them a resolution from each district, if we're letting them know right now that this is what is expected of them and that they can expect to not have any assistance in their reelection bid if they are not willing to carry this ball forward for us, I think that's when you're going to start to see movement on the part of these House reps. You know, what they've said up until now, in short, Karen, is this. Right up until now, it seems like it's in my best personal interest to not impeach, even though I know this is the most impeachable administration in U.S. history that is a disaster for this country, and he still has a whole nother year to create even bigger disasters. We know we should do it, but at the moment, it appears it's not in my personal best political interest to do that. Well, the minute they're handed one of these resolutions from their home district, now it is absolutely is in their best personal interest. And this should be happening in Scott Desjarlais' area in Tennessee. This should be happening in Louis Gohmert or Babin's area in Texas. People who are involved with us, either at North American Law Center, Patriots Union, Veteran Defenders, or CAC at one of the states, the Constitutional Accountability Coalition, wherever you're connected to us and helping to push impeachment forward, this is what should be happening in your district. Is you should be taking one of these district level resolutions that we'll put up tonight or tomorrow, and you should be printing it out, and you should be going to your district meetings if you are in the Republican Party in those districts, and you should be pushing to get these passed, because it will have teeth in it that says we are not raising funds for or funding anyone in office today who will not act to protect the Constitution of the people of the United States, as the Constitution requires in Article 2, Section 4.
JB, I just wanted to let you know that Stephen Pidgeon has joined our call. For our listeners, Stephen Pidgeon is the lead counsel with the North American Law Center, and he, along with Barbara Tate, drafted the Articles of Impeachment. Stephen, I don't know if you were on when we played the interview with Representative Yoho. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And any comments about that, or, you know, I mean, maybe explain to the audience that might not know what a resolution is and is not?
Well, a resolution basically, you know, it's an expression of the opinion, the non-binding opinion of the House, if the House were to so adopt. But it does not have the force of law. It's just an opinion. Now, sometimes it can be a very persuasive opinion, particularly if you have a two-thirds majority of the House express an opinion on a resolution or something. And so, for the most part, it's non-binding as a matter of law. It does not create new law. There are resolutions that do have some impetus when you're talking about going to war, that those kinds of resolutions are typically very impactful. But in this particular case where this congressman is going, this is this is designed to let some hot air out of the balloon. I always worry about those kinds of resolutions because, you know, you do the minimum, or you do whatever is necessary to take the wind out of the sails of those who are coming against you, and you do only that much. And so a certain percentage, will say, well, something's being done. And so they'll drop their effort or they won't continue on believing that something in Congress is happening, that there is some forward momentum, when in reality there is no forward momentum. And,
right.
And until there is a plan to either appoint a special prosecutor and begin pursuing these things, you know, it's so interesting because what has broken recently is that there are a whole raft of people that agree that the releasing of the Gitmo detainees in trade for Bergdahl was a criminal act.
Uh-huh.
And that's a domestic criminal act. And again, this is, you know, so often when you talk to people about the commission of treason worldwide, you know, Congress is being briefed on the inside. Well, this is foreign policy, and foreign policy is sometimes ugly and, you know, appears like treason, but who are you to second-guess what's in the best interest of the United States compared to the duly elected president? And I use duly elected in quotations. But when you have a clear violation of federal domestic law, and in this particular case, you know, these five detainees from Gitmo were, you know, they were equivalent of Al-Qaeda generals that were released back into the field to make war against us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were traded for a guy who is now being subjected to court-martial for desertion. So that kind of an act required from me. Yes.
Steve, glad you're here, by the way, brother. You know, I refer to what you're talking about here in your response to the question on resolution and resolutions like this. I refer to this as busy work. If you've ever hired a landscape crew, you know, and you had three workers and two of them are sweating and humping, and the other one, every now and then you kind of keep an eye on them, and every time they see you look in their direction, they'll pick up a plant and move it to the other side of the yard and set it down. And otherwise, they're not going to do anything until you look over there again, then they'll pick it up, carry it to the other side of the yard again, put it down again. It's busy work. That's what these resolutions are. What this resolution is, in my opinion, just like all the others, just like the Benghazi hearings, to be honest with you, in the House right now, nobody's going to file any criminal charges against Hillary Clinton on whatever it is they think they're going to find. And they haven't even discussed what we put in the Benghazi report 72 hours after the incident occurred 3 years ago. They're still monkeying around trying to find that information that's been out there in the public for 3 years in these congressional investigations. So this is busy work. This is work that is used to tell constituents that you're doing something. Look, here I am. I'm doing something. It sounds a lot like what it is you said you wanted me to do, except it's non-binding and has no force of law behind it. It's not going anywhere. It wouldn't do anything even if it did go somewhere. But here I am. I'm moving the plant from this end of the yard to that end and back again, just to make sure that you can see I'm working for my constituents up here. You disagree with that?
No, I agree with that entirely.
Absolutely.
And the force and effect of that is to, there are a certain number of people who will buy into it that, you know, he's a conservative, and therefore he's taking this bull by the horns, and he's talking about high crimes and misdemeanors, and that's important. And that may be enough for somebody to put their head back in the sand and say everything's going to be good, at least until the next terrorist attack.
Now, Steve, you're the lead counsel for North American Law Center, thank God, and I'm just nobody, and I don't have a law degree on the wall that says I know anything about the law, so I'll ask you the question, but correct me if I'm wrong, do we not already have legal definitions for misdemeanor, high crimes, treason, treachery, tyranny? Don't we already have legal definitions for all of those words? Is there some reason why we need a new House resolution to come up with new definitions of those words?
Absolutely not. I mean, of course you have with high crimes and misdemeanors, you know, those that term misdemeanor was not construed by the founders the same way it is now. A misdemeanor more or less means in the modern world an offense for which you can be in prison for less than a year, whereas a felony is defined by 1 year or more in prison as the penalty. But when you're talking about the high crimes and misdemeanors under the statute, Where it gets vague is that treason, by the way, is defined in the Constitution itself. There's no messing around. It tells you exactly what it is. Treason is defined as aiding and abetting the enemies of the country at the time of war, right? And there's more to the definition than that, but it's right in the Constitution itself. Bribery was defined, I believe, in the first five books of Moses. So that definition has been around for a while. The question of what is a high crime and a misdemeanor really becomes kind of a term of art when you're talking about where the Constitution is applied. But what you have to look to is you have to look to what offenses were on the table when Andrew Johnson was impeached. What offenses were on the table when Richard Nixon was impeached? And when you look at those offenses, you know, Nixon was impeached for covering up Watergate. But he was also impeached, I think there were 21 articles against Nixon. And some of those articles included that he had, you know, wrongfully invaded Cambodia without congressional authorization because they'd gone over the border to bomb some VC positions that were in Cambodia. And there was also a resolution that denounced him for having a hate list. And he was using some aspects of the federal government to go after his political enemies. And then, of course, there was covering up Watergate. Now, the offenses of Mr. Obama, I mean, they're just through the roof, comparatively speaking. He's used the IRS to attack his political opponents, and he has demonized his political opponents. I mean, he considers Christian conservatives to be people who cling to their Bibles and guns like a bunch of ignorant rednecks in the backwoods somewhere that are deranged. You know, he has persecuted and prosecuted Christians on the basis of their faith alone. He has targeted Christian groups and used the IRS as a mechanism to deny 501c3 status, to go after and audit groups that were also Christian and then became a part of a political machine that was opposed to his tyranny. Anything that invades his tyranny, he uses all aspects of the federal government to pursue and to persecute his enemies. Now, that was an offense for which Nixon was impeached. And so is that a high crime and a misdemeanor? Does it require something to be defined in Congress? Does it require something to be defined in the U.S. Code? No, it doesn't. And the reason why is because impeachment is really at its root a political process and not a criminal process. There's no criminal sanction that will be applied to the president if he is impeached. Impeachment will result in him being, you know, essentially what the House will find is that he has committed in the House's opinion. And the House has the right, well, the Congress has the right to write what is a felony and what is a misdemeanor all day long. They could completely change the criminal code tomorrow. Therefore, because all of the legislative power is housed in Congress, the House can essentially decide what is a high crime and what is a misdemeanor. So, for instance, you know, what's the bombing of Libya outside the War Powers Act a high crime and misdemeanor? It's a question. But if the House were to take up articles of impeachment and they put them in place, and the House is expressing its opinion. In our opinion, this amounts to a high crime and a misdemeanor.
Sir, let me ask you this question. In my reading of the founding documents, which, as you know, I've been doing for over 30 years now and writing about it for over 20 or 25, in my reading, I look at that line regarding high crimes and misdemeanors in Article 2, Section 4, we shall impeach on those crimes. I look at that language very much the way I look at other language in the U.S. Constitution, and that the founders chose that terminology in order to essentially be very broad, and that the people could impeach and remove someone from office on just a misdemeanor if the misdemeanor was destructive of the intended purpose of the Constitution itself. or on high crimes, such as treason, would certainly fall under high crime. I read that as the founder was saying the people could impeach and remove a president. It didn't have to be murder. It could have been a lesser crime than murder that they could impeach him from. Am I missing something in how I'm interpreting their use of that phrase?
No, I don't think so. I think, and again, a lot of it depends on, this concept of misdemeanor, because misdemeanor is, like, for instance, we talked the last time we were on the show, we talked about these concepts of malfeasance, misfeasance, and nonfeasance. And, malfeasance is where you do evil instead of doing your duty. Misfeasance is when you do something other than your duty. Now, you have the same thing with a misdemeanor. What you're talking about is an intentional act to violate the law at some level that doesn't amount to a high crime.
Okay, let me stop you right there for a second so that listeners understand. I'm going to use the example of Obama refusing to enforce existing immigration law. Now, the direct effort to do that is a violation of law itself, although it may not be murder yet. But once the people who flood into the country through that decision and through that policy begin to create havoc within the country, now it moves from being a violation, which could be viewed maybe as a misdemeanor. He refused to uphold standing laws. That might not fall quite as high as high crime until you begin to see the results of that, which is the fundamental changing of our society, of our voting demographics for our country, and a bankrupting of our systems by doing that, and ultimately even waging jihad in America through the refugee resettlement portion of that, where we know that it's military-age men that are coming in, not women and children, refugees largely. And so is that a good example of something that might start out as something that may fall under misdemeanor, that he deserves to be removed from office for it, but may never be incarcerated for it afterwards? But once it goes the next step and becomes something that is directly detrimental to the people of the United States, essentially ends in the fact of having war waged against Americans on their own soil by people who were allowed to infiltrate and invade the nation. Now it moves from misdemeanor to a high crime in my mind. Does that make some sense or no?
Sure. I think there's some gray area that takes place when you say, well, as the president, I'm going to turn the blind eye to the immigration laws. And, of course, that's been going on since, Truman. And you've had one president after another, whether it's Republican or Democrat, the Republicans look the other way because their constituency gets cheap labor, and the Democrats look the other way because they get voters. And so between the two of them, they both ignore the law while they, dump undocumented people on the states and then demand that the states pick up the tab. So, for instance, there's some well-known cases in the 60s with Brennan and Douglas dissenting over and over again. No, in fact, I think it was Brennan and Douglas wrote the majority opinion on it. Or, excuse me, Brennan and Marshall, Thurgood Marshall. And what they wrote was that, the Supremacy Clause allows the United States government to be sole decision maker when it comes to immigration. Then the United States government deals in misfeasance and malfeasance and nonfeasance, repeatedly ignoring their own laws, refusing to enforce the borders, refusing to protect the, as Savage would say, the borders, the language, and the culture, refusing to. And so then the nation is overwhelmed with people who are seeking, state handouts, whether it's housing or welfare or medical care or whatever it might be. And, of course, they're also burdening the penal system as well and law enforcement. So they come in invading these states, and then the states said, hey, we don't want this. We want to be able to enforce against this kind of immigration like Arizona under Jan Brewer just tried to do. And what you get is the Supreme Court comes down and says, sorry, there is no law that you can pass that's going to be deemed constitutional if you have to say anything whatsoever about immigration, because the supremacy clause trumps it.
Okay, so I agree with what you're saying, but that's exactly the type of scenario that leads us right back to impeachment, because the fact is, every time somebody has tried to take a step towards enforcement of existing laws at the local or state level, the Obama administration has stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. We've decided we're not going to enforce any of our laws, and we're not going to allow you to either. And what that leaves us with is, we're supposed to have three different branches of government, but we don't. We have one, and it's the executive branch. It's a dictatorship. He's under court order right now to cease and desist his efforts to continue to allow the invasion of the United States. And that doesn't matter to him. So the judicial branch doesn't matter. Congress is supposed to be defunding it. They haven't defunded anything in 5 years since there were Republicans were given control of it in 2010. They haven't defunded anything. During that time frame, we've gone from, 11 or 12 trillion in debt to 20 trillion in debt, and $100 trillion more in unfunded liabilities. So obviously Congress doesn't matter. But why would Congress matter as long as people like Ted Yoho are going to do nothing except pass non-binding resolutions to try to redefine words that have a 2,000-year definition attached to them already? I mean, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, sitting in prisons in the United States right now who were put in there on misdemeanors, who were put in there on high crimes, who were not president of the United States, who did not breach the public oath or the public trust when they committed those crimes. So it's not like we need new definitions of those words. And as far as the immigration thing itself goes, Reagan tried to fix that with Democrats back in 1986. And if you go read the 1986 Reform Act, everything that's in there is what is being proposed in yet another Reform Act, essentially. All we've got here is 247 House Republicans moving a bush from one side of the lawn to the other side of the lawn every time somebody looks that direction. And that's why we end up back here at impeachment. We only have an hour and a half show tonight. And so rather than continue to, work on the legal minutiae of some of these things, I do want to come back to the solutions because, Karen mentioned earlier there was over 200,000 people, whatever, signed one particular impeachment petition. Actually, there's been more than 2 or 3 million people sign several different petitions on impeachment. But unfortunately, those petitions were put up by other organizations for the sole purpose of building databases getting you to sign the petition, and not one of those has come forward actually supporting impeachment. Now, that in part is what allows someone like Louie Gohmert out of Texas to say, hey, it's your guy's fault. Nobody is telling us they support impeachment. Well, you got over 2 million signatures on their petition saying they supported impeachment, which is probably more signatures you have on any other petition laying on your desk this year or in your entire tenure, for that matter. Except they're not laying on their desk. They never sent them the results of the petition because they never intended to. It's like impeaching Bill Clinton for a sex scandal, knowing the whole time that there's no way you're going to get a conviction removal on a sex scandal. 2/3 of the people in D.C. probably have one of those in their closet, for heaven's sakes. And so, but they could have impeached him if they were not interested in just moving the bush or the shrub from one side of the yard to the other and back. If they weren't just doing busy work, they could have impeached Bill Clinton on selling nuclear technology to China, who then gave it to North Korea and then to Syria and other places and Iran. And so now we find ourselves sitting here in a World War III powder keg, all emanating all the way back to when Bill Clinton first sold nuclear technology to China, but nobody tried to impeach him for that, even though the person who gave him the money for it, $300,000 in cash, Johnny Chung, went to prison for that. So, here we have Republicans still, that was in the 1990s, here we are in 2015, and we put Republicans in control of both chambers of Congress, and all we have still is 247 Republicans moving a shrub from one side of the yard to the other. You disagree?
No, I agree with you entirely, but my problem, JB, is that what I'm seeing more and more, and I think what we have discussed as the time has gone on concerning this particular resolution, is that we're seeing greater and greater levels of tyranny coming from the executive branch. I mean, I read that that our congressman from Florida was actually threatened by the Obama administration just recently as to even this little resolution. You step out of line, and Obama shows up personally to threaten you. I know when, you know, he just has that capacity. And so, you know, if you go back to the 2008 election, you know, where Hillary Clinton won Michigan, and, you know, you were up in Michigan. She won Michigan and she won Florida, which meant that Mr. Obama did not win the Democratic nomination pursuant to the various states' primary elections. And yet, by the time the convention was done, he secured the nomination, and he secured the nomination. If you recall, the night before the nomination was secured, the head of the Arkansas DNC was murdered. And so, there was a certain amount of impetus that went into the Clintons capitulating to what could only be described as a fraudulent nomination through the DNC in 2008. Of course, the voter fraud in 2012 was significant, with 104% of some counties in Ohio voting and 120% in Florida. And when you see those kinds of things, you know, you see that I do not believe that the man was ever lawfully elected to any office, but the threats have been nonstop. So it's been a combination of bribery, blackmail, and intimidation. And the intimidation is no holds barred intimidation. I mean, when people get killed, people lose their career. I mean, look, you know, Breitbart comes down with a heart attack out of the clear blue sky. The reporter for the Rolling Stone, all of a sudden his Mercedes malfunctions and is doing 140 in a residential street, right? You know, there have been a number of people who have said, we've got some extremely important information that we're going to disclose tomorrow, who never saw tomorrow. And so I think you've got Congress. I think, I mean, there is, you know, there's one word that rises to the surface of this boiling pot of stew, and that word is tyranny. And now, so let us take a look. If we accept the premise that, in fact, our president has risen to tyrant, then it is incumbent upon everybody listening to this show to go back and read the Declaration of Independence one more time concerning tyranny in the United States. That's premise number one. Premise number two. Premise number two is... if we are under a tyranny, and that's what the situation is, then the second question is, what do we intend to do about that? Because look at the scope and the nature of this tyranny. Mr. Obama, I think, has made it perfectly clear that his allegiance is to Saudi Arabia and the Saudi Arabian money and their political system, you know, Sunni Islam. Their directives in terms of foreign policy, he has agreed to provide the American military to support whatever foreign policy objective they happen to have, whether or not it's in the U.S. interest at all. And so this whole conflagration in Syria is really about whether or not the Saudis and the Qataris and the Kuwaitis get a pipeline through Syria to supply natural gas and oil to Europe, or whether the Iranians and the Russians get one. And that's what this contest is. That's what this whole war is.
Uh-huh.
And so, but the problem is when you look at what Mr. Obama is doing, he's shutting down surveillance on mosques. You know, they can download this phone call. They can download every email, every text message, every phone call that we have. They can track us using GPS. They can surf our Facebook pages. On and on the list goes of what the NSA is currently doing to the average American. But Mr. Obama has prohibited that from occurring in mosques or occurring against people that are on the Islamic terrorist list, including the 72 members of the Muslim Brotherhood that are working for Homeland Security that are on the no-fly list.
So let's come around again, Steve, because we're an hour into an hour and a half show, and I do want to open the mic for some callers here for the last half hour. And you know, we can do show after show, and we will continue to do show after show. laying all this out for people. But with, you know, the most important thing at this point is solutions to all this. And in our, my opinion, certainly, I think, and most reasonable opinions today, impeachment is really the only final peaceful solution that we have that is prescribed by the Constitution in Article 2, Section 4. It says we shall impeach when we have someone guilty of the following crimes. And they use the broad term high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, real fast, before we open it up, I want to list again for people who may be listening for the first time. The NALC articles have been out there now since July 2014. It's only in the last few months after the Republicans gained control of the Senate that people are finally in the mood to do something with them, now that they realize that no matter how many Republicans you put in charge of Congress, they're not going to stop anything unless they stop everything. You know, at the end of the day here, I firmly believe, and I know the people at our organizations firmly believe, that really impeachment is the final option on the table for the American people. Mm-hmm. That is a peaceful option. That is a peaceful option. And I'm concerned, I think probably all of us are, that if the American people don't even have the guts and gumption to take a peaceful option, all of the false bravado we see online about locking and loading is probably just that, false bravado. if they won't take peaceful action, they're sure not going to take violent action. I'm amazed by the number of so-called constitutionalists who won't do the constitutional thing here. But in any event, yeah, I do want to talk for just a second about what happened in Michigan. And then if you want, Karen, while I'm doing that, go ahead and prepare to open, you know, some callers.
Right. Well, we have I just want to say to the people on the phone lines, if you have a question, press the number 1 on your phone to put yourself in queue. And also just to let you know that we will not be having a radio show next Monday. We will not be having a show again until after Christmas, and I want to, before we open the lines, and I don't get a chance to say this, I just wanted to take this time to thank everyone for their support and all the hard work that I know many of you have done in order to support the impeachment effort. So we at the North American Law Center and the Constitutional Accountability Coalition just wanted to thank you all from the bottom of our hearts and wish you all a blessed and Merry Christmas. So I wanted to say that call.
Excellent.
What's that?
Excellent, excellent. Okay, excellent.
I wanted to say that before the call. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Before gets the cut call, off
once
like
we get into the
last Monday night.
Right. Once we get into the Q&A, you know, that'll be the end of the show. So I wanted to get that out there up front. And like I said, if you want to ask a question, just press the number 1. And we do have a lot of people already lined up in the queue. So when you do get online live, please make your statement very to the point and brief. I will put you back on hold, and you can listen to your answer or to the answer. Okay, so you got 1 minute, JB.
I'll try to wrap it in 1 minute. I spoke now in 6 different places across Michigan in 2 1-week trips, and I can tell you Michigan is absolutely on fire. I wish all 50 states were doing what's happening in Michigan right now. When I speak with people in person, it's very different than when we're doing this on Blog Talk or anywhere else, because people have time to visit a little bit and get to understand some of the details of all this. But the bottom line is, Article 3 in NALC article says that this administration, Obama and others in it, are guilty of aiding and abetting known enemies of the United States. We've discussed some of that tonight. We've discussed it on many shows before. I don't think it's a secret that he's guilty of doing that. Article 2 says malfeasance, misuse and abuse of the executive branch. I think everybody that listens to this show, and probably 70% of America, knows he's guilty of those things. Article 1 is critical. He is also guilty, according to our evidence and evidence others who have investigated. He's also guilty of usurpation of office via criminal identity fraud. He is not who he says he is, and there is plenty of evidence to support that one, which means everything he's done for 7 years under the color of that fraud is also an act of fraud. And these things must be dealt with. The country cannot afford to enter the next era, and even if we could make it to the next election, even if we could win the next election, we will not have a constitutional republic intact at that point, no matter who wins the election, unless these people are held accountable for the crimes they've committed against this country. And so people in Michigan seem to get that, and they're acting on it in a way that's going to make a difference, and we need people in every state following their lead at this point by getting involved in these state and district-level resolutions and notifying their members of the House that they will not have the Republican Party support in their district for re-election if they refuse to act in upholding their oath.
Right, and we'll have that information posted on the website. There is an actual tab for resolutions, and there is some information there right now, but we're in the process of revising it. So I would wait until sometime tomorrow to check there for the resolution. And I also did give everybody some quick and easy action items. Again, calling Representative Yoho, we don't need a resolution. We need you to take the articles. He has those articles. His office told me that he knows they know about the NAP articles. So he has them. We don't need a resolution. We need him to take those articles to the Judiciary Committee. Same thing for Representative Fleming. And if you are a constituent of Representative Yoho, try to set up a visit face-to-face. And I recommend that you do that. Anybody, make an appointment with your representative while they're home for Christmas and get in their face about these articles and their responsibility as an elected official. So anyhow, we're going to take the first caller. The last four numbers are 8899. Okay, hello? Okay, 8899.
Hello.
Yes. Could you turn your TV down or off? Okay, and who are we speaking to and where are you from?
This is Neil from Carlsbad, California.
How are you doing, Neil? Oh, no. And your question?
Actually, I want to highlight what they said before, that we need to do this before the so-called elections of 2016, because I will point out that in 2008 and 2012, there were 35 million more votes cast than there were registered voters. So we cannot count on the elections to remove this monster. We must do something before then, and that's why it's so important to push impeachment right now. That's all. I have
Thank
no
you
question.
Very much.
You guys are doing a great job. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good night.
Night.
Okay. Our next caller is last four numbers are 8253. Your name
Brad
and
Austin.
Where are you calling?
Hi.
California.
Called
How you doing?
Last week. My voice isn't so good, but I'm good. Last week I took 2 days to call over 150 members of Congress. Details of my spiel available on request because you know I'm long-winded. I never call him the president because he's not. Additional to that, I have two news flashes. Number one, December 21st cover story on the Enquirer. Impeach Obama now. He did nothing to stop the California massacre. Several stories inside, including quotes from Pam Geller and others. Isn't it maddening that our rag mags will tell more truth than the mainstream media?
Right.
One other thing. On Sunday morning sermon at Swaggart Ministries, Donnie Swaggart preached Ezekiel 37 about the dry bones and God's restoration of Israel. At the end of it, he said, "No demonically inspired tyrant, from Herod to Haman to Hitler to Barack Obama, will stop this, no matter what." Now, I wish he'd used the alliterative Hussein Obama, but either way, it's been said, and it's the closest we've come to have any ministry, any media call him what he is. Additionally, I decided to call other TV ministries and inform them that they had better get their parishioners, or whatever you call them, on the phones to call for impeachment. Christians, and I'm one of them, need to take action, not just talk and not just pray, although pray is critically important, but we need to do more. And what you're saying about impeachment is actually scripturally correct. From the get-go, God told Moses to clear and clean the land before they could settle it. And this goes throughout Scripture regarding every vestige of evil. So this is right on.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you
I want
so
to just
much.
I just want to confirm that this is something I say in every public event that I speak at. I'm usually speaking to Christians largely, and sometimes in a church where these events are taking place, which is, as far as I'm concerned, is the right place to do it. And I always point out that faith without works is dead. And so I pray every day, as I know Steve does and Barbara does and Tim does and Jim do, and I'm sure Karen does and Dave and others that work with us here and Linda. We all pray every day, and we pray the right kinds of prayers. I know this. But we also understand that we have to pray like everything depends on God and work like everything depends on us. It's only when we do both of those things do we have any chance.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The next caller is last four numbers, 7154, your first name, and where are you from?
Hi, this is Dr. Tom from North Carolina, though I'm in Pittsburgh for the holidays. I just want to say thanks to everybody for all the work you've done. Make a couple of comments, and that is, if anybody wants to Google Obama's dead list that reaffirms that he has murdered his way to the top, Clinton's the same thing. You can do that, starting with Vince Foster, even earlier than that. My sense is one of the speakers before, I think it was the attorney, said that what we are living under now is a tyranny. And my own sense, after listening to Walter Jones, my congressman, publicly state in a town hall meeting in October that the only way we're going to save the republic is via impeaching him. Well, I talked to him on a QT after the meeting, and it was like he never said it at all. So my sense is, and this is just my own perception as a psychologist, my sense is they have put out markers to say, you see Breitbart, you see what happened to all the other people, you see what happened to Corsi, the same thing will happen to you. You will disappear. You will die.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just two other points that I wanted to make. One of them is, I don't trust anything in the courts anymore, or even the FBI. But apparently, Hillary's guy that took care of her server, the guy that's pleading the fifth, there may be an in with him if the FBI or Congress or whoever, because Loretta Lynch isn't going to do it, if they can get him to talk by offering him maybe the witness protection program, but offering him immunity or something else to get him to talk, that may be a way to be able to get her, because if you get those missing emails from her with this Palumbo guy or whatever his name was, it may be the smoking gun that gets Obama as well. So all I can say is keep up the good work.
Thank you, Doc.
Stay on the line just a second, Doc.
Yeah.
Are you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, he's here.
Okay. Someone brought this to my attention today. We were discussing an earlier conference call, and since you're a psychologist, I wanted to bring this up while you were on the line. They brought up something I had never heard of before. It's called gaslighting. We were discussing how the American people had been put in a position where they could no longer tell up from down or right from left or good from evil or anything else. And the person who had had some experience as a abused wife a number of years back and has fully gotten herself out of that situation, recovered, and I can tell you is one of the strongest, most beautiful women I've ever met, and I love that she works with us at this point, proving once again that everything happens for a reason in God's earth. And And so she is stronger than ever now, an amazing person. But she made me aware of the term gaslighting. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, so I'll read what the definition of that is, and it's a clinical psychological condition. It says it is a form of mental abuse in which information is twisted or spun, selectively omitted to favor the abuser, or false information is presented with the intent of making victims doubt their own memory, perception, and sanity. And I thought, Lord, is that not every, almost describes every person out there right now that we come in contact with that seems to not be able to tell up from down. And in the past, I've used the example of we seem to be a nation of beaten wives here, afraid of our own shadow, afraid to do the right thing, even though we know it's the right thing to do, and we know the consequences of not doing the right thing. Are you familiar with this terminology? Just curious.
Yes, I am. And let me make a comment. And this doesn't seem germane at first. It seems so far out left field that it's insane. But a few years ago, I was doing some research, and I came upon a neurosurgeon that was doing research. He's done a video on it. He's published a book on it. I can't think of his name right now. But he was talking about the effects of fluoride. Fluoride in the water and fluoride in toothpaste. And if you take, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yeah. It talks about how it makes people apathetic, how it makes people lose any critical thinking skills. And in addition to that, in addition to a neurophysiological aspect, which may be a part of it, there, you know, Paul talked, I think it was Paul, it might have been Luke, that was talking about we are at war with the powers and principalities of darkness. What we are doing, Carl Jung talked about constellations or complexes. We really have a tyranny of like-minded people that hate God, hate mankind, hate Christ, and their goal is enslavement, and they want to create a utopia with them in charge and us enslaved. I won't go into details. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. But what they are willing to do is any means justify the end. And that includes the media. That includes the Marxist idea of multiculturalism, of toleration. It means the destruction of the churches. Now Christianity has no sin, so you can't judge them. And after a while, people go to the Stockholm syndrome. And that is, you hear this all the time, and you start identifying with them, with the lies. And what people, since they don't have anyone holding up the standard honorably, because religion's been so besmirched by actions of the religious leaders, that they have nowhere to turn, and they toss up their hands. That's why I said last time I called in, only Larry Bailey and I, out of 700 people in our community, are willing to do anything. And I just got an email from a friend of mine who lives in Georgia. She has been writing to her congressman. They refuse to reply. So what I see is unless people can get together, or we have a kind of a God's, this is a Jubilee year, God acting in miraculous ways, like to be able to make a break in an exposition, then I really see horrific future for the country, a total breakdown of mob rule. So
I agree, Doc. I agree, Doc. Thank you. Real quick, is it Captain Larry Bailey you're referring to?
Yeah, Larry Bailey, my friend. Is that who you meant?
Captain Bailey, yes?
Yeah, Captain Bailey, yeah.
Okay, well, give him all best, would you please?
Okay, tell me your name again.
J.B. Williams.
J.B. Williams, yeah. I just talked to Larry today. We were talking about some other issues, so, yeah, I will.
Well,
I will, J.B.
We'll give him our best, okay? Go ahead.
Thank you.
Can I speak to this comment just a little bit? I think this is just a wonderful thing that he just said. And I do want to kind of elaborate on that. He is right that it's going to take the hand of God, I think, now, but takes a restoration, and part of that restoration hinges around at least recognizing these edicts that are found in the Ten Commandments. And, you know, as you and I have talked about numerous times at the North American Law Center, you know, all human rights spring from those Ten Commandments. And people that are being taught in their church that they're not under those commandments and feel free to violate those commandments are lawless workers of iniquity. And trust me, when I tell you, the Messiah will not recognize them. And so this what Judge Roy Moore used to put forward about the Ten Commandments being a centerpiece, really, of our law and our jurisprudence, it's so mandatory. And that those who are under the Ten Commandments then have the right to claim the rights that are found therein. If you're not under those Ten Commandments, you don't have those rights. And I think just the restoration of people coming back to recognize that there is a natural law, and that we're called to follow that natural law. You said it earlier tonight that faith without works is dead. We're called to follow that natural law, and I think it has to change in each person's life. It cannot be a discussion that happens at church, and you cannot expect the mass movement. What you have to do is you have to change the soil in your own garden. You have to transform yourself and restore yourself to the path that was put before you in Scripture. And I think if people start doing, if we can't solidify our own personal morality where anything goes, then we are going to be completely overcome by Islam. Because if anything goes, that's one way that will go, and that way will not tolerate any other way. And so in order for us to resist the enemy, we first have to be convicted in our own morality, and we have to be called back to that morality to restore ourselves. And that's really the grassroots that has to occur here, because people right now in this country are given over to the lie. They're given over to a reprobate mind, and they're given over to deception because they have refused to love the truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And it is only by seeking and finding that truth and then ingesting and restoring that truth in your own personal life that we can move forward as a nation. And so, yes, the Ten Commandments call. They're calling. And people need to listen to those commandments, and they need to put those commandments back in their life. They need to become a moral people again.
Absolutely. Thank you. We're going to go to the next caller. We're going to try and get everybody in. We have a few more minutes. The last four numbers are 8493. Hello, 8493?
Hi, this is Ed Sunderland. How are you guys
doing? Well, hello,
me?
Mr. Sunderland.
Great.
How are you?
Doing good. Listen, I just wanted to ask, I know that there's probably enough congressmen to go ahead with impeachment. Whenever it goes to the Senate, what are they charged to do at that point? Assuming that the House says, okay, let's go, can the Senate refuse it, or do they have to go ahead with trial?
Hello?
Yeah. Does the Senate have to go through with the...
Right. Well, the impeachment occurs in the House. JB, are you
right.
still on?
I'm sorry. I am still here. I thought Steve was going to field that one. Ed, in 3 seconds, summarize your question, because I admit only half paying attention. I thought it was a legal question for Steve.
Ed just wanted to know, once impeachment occurs in the House, what happens over in the Senate? And can they refuse to proceed?
I can answer that, JB. The answer is they have no lawful authority to refuse to proceed like they did with the Clinton administration. They are supposed to pursue. They have to have a findings, and they have to have a hearing, and they either vote to remove from office, or they vote to not remove from office. But either way, they have to vote. And when they don't, once again, you have misfeasance of office, which really should be an impeachable offense for any senator that engages in that kind of behavior.
Okay, well, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the procedure is. Okay, the House votes to impeach. Then, from what I understand, there's got to be a trial through the Senate. And technically, who comes up with the witnesses and so on in order to present their case for impeachment?
Well, what happens is the House managers bring the articles of impeachment to the Senate. The Senate then sits as a jury, but the Senate also sits as prosecutors.
The Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, sits as the judge overseeing the trial, and any member of the Senate can bring forth witnesses. And so, obviously, you're going to have some partisans on behalf of the president who will bring their own witnesses in, and then the Senate can bring their own witnesses in. And pursuant to subpoena, they will bring these witnesses in and require them to testify, and then the witnesses have to give testimony under oath, and at that point, exhibits can be produced and other documentary evidence can be produced. And the Senate at that point can either take a strategy of finding facts and making conclusions of law, or the Senate can move ahead on their own accord and say, we have sufficient testimony here to warrant the removal from office of the president. It's not a criminal action. It's just a determination as to whether or not high crimes, misdemeanors, treason, or bribery has been committed sufficient to warrant the removal of the man from office. That's it.
Okay.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yep. I just wanted to be sure that if the House, because I keep hearing these congressmen time and time again saying, well, if we vote to impeach, the House isn't going to push it. They're going to kill it. And I'm sick of listening to it because I think it's BS.
Yeah, and my opinion is put the articles out there, make them vote. And anyone who votes against it, then we know who's a traitor to the country.
Why? I think we already know that.
The fact is that even though President Clinton was not removed, he was still impeached. You know, that's still, once the House impeaches, you're impeached. It's just the House decides whether to remove you from office or not. And, you know, so, you know, the way I feel is there's still a black mark against your administration if you end up being impeached, even if you're not removed. So, again, it's a poor excuse. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
thank you very much, Ed. Nice hearing from you.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. We have one more caller, and we have 2 minutes. So this is number 4008.
Thanks,
your
Karen.
Name and where are you calling from?
Thanks, Karen. James from Ohio. I need your help or JB's help or maybe somebody else's help on the line. If anybody knows Mike Huckabee, I called his office today and I asked for a favor. I suggested that he formally ask the U.S. Congress to start impeachment proceedings against Barack Obama and his administration. I should suggest they start the conversation off with Obama's stated views on Islam, his bungling at Benghazi, the release of any enemy combats at Guantanamo Bay, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm basically suggesting to Mr. Huckabee that he out-Trump Trump. Because he's going to be on stage tomorrow night. And for him, and again, I've asked, and I don't know whether somebody there knows him well enough to ask or, hey, listen, we'd like for you to do this. We've already filed the articles. Here they are. We're going to make it easy for you. If you need our help, we're welcome to. But I would love to see him blow this up tomorrow night on TV.
Did you get any response from his office? Or
I'm going to call back. I know better than getting a response initially. This is kind of a interesting request, if you will. But I would have people please follow up with that office. Their number is 844.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead with the number real quick.
844-780-6785.
All right. Thank you, James. And the only reason I'm rushing you is we got less than 60 seconds here. So, Karen, I'm just going to toss it to you to wrap up and remind people where they need to get to us and get to what we're working on here.
All righty. Thank you. We have about 5 seconds. Again, Merry Christmas to everyone. God bless you all, and God bless America. Thank you for joining.
Thank you all. Good night.